Okay, so I can start. Is it okay for everybody? I see some people entering. Okay, so I would like to talk about qubits in a real setup. And especially what I would like to talk about is the effect of the external world and the effect of the external environment. So first, I would like to thank the students and collaborators for the great work. So if we think in terms of external world and external important environment, of course we have to take into account the classical measuring device. And as we know, it leads to the wave function collapse. But today, I would like also to include the effect of the quantum environment. And the quantum world essentially comes from the many particles and fields which are around given a qubit that we like to pick. Okay, so that's the main idea. And to start with a well-defined idea, let me start with a qubit. So we apply a field along the z-axis, and we apply a field in the xy plane, and here I choose to start with a field along the x-axis. And this field delta is important because it creates the quantum superposition of up and down states. Okay? Now let me add the quantum environment that we want to talk about. So I would start with a well-known problem where we couple the qubit along the z-axis to a set of harmonic oscillators. And we couple the qubit or spin along the z-axis, and we couple the spin to the coordinates xi of the oscillators. Okay, so this is a well-known problem of environment. So here you can have a nice survey by Leggett-Chakraverty et al. And essentially one important quantity is a spectral function of the environment. So what does it mean? It means that you take the coupling operator, lambda I xi, in the Heisenberg picture, and you look at the correlation function of this operator, first in time, and you Fourier a transform this, and it gives the well-known spectral function. Okay? And for today, we will look at the famous case of ohmic bass, which means that the spectral function goes linearly with frequency at small frequency. And alpha will be an important parameter that characterizes the coupling between the qubit and the environment. And we will work in a limit of, a very large bath where the high frequency cutoff of the environment is very large and much larger than these two fields. Okay, so that's a problem. It seems quite a simple problem because we start with just one qubit. But we need to think in we need to take into account that we have many, many oscillators. And as a result, as soon as we couple this small quantum system to this big bath, the quantum problem becomes a many-body problem. And therefore, to solve this kind of Hamiltonians, we need many-body tools. So of course, first, let's start with something simple. We start with no coupling between bath and spin. I'm sure that you can all know how to solve this, this simple case. So it's a 2x2 matrix problem in quantum mechanics. And you can check that the spin lies in a pure state, which means that the qubit lies on the surface of the Bloch sphere. Okay, now let's add the bath. And as I mentioned, then the problem becomes a full many-body Hamiltonian. So at the general level, to solve these problems, we can use a trial wave function, as we know for many well-known many body problems, BCS superconductivity, spin chain, quantum Hall system, etc. And we can use exact solutions, and even we can use exact numerics, an exact numerical renormalization group approach. Okay, so that's what we use. And now we want to know first what are the ground state properties of this small qubit when we just couple it to this external path. So just one qubit to start with. And as we know, it's useful to think in terms of to integrate out this big world, which is the environment, and to think in terms of the spin reduced density matrix. So the diagonal terms tell us the probability to be in the up state in the usual spinor basis. So this is the probability to be in the up state. This is the probability to be in the down state. And the off diagonal terms are important because they tell us something about the quantum coherence of this qubit or quantum interferences. And so the first thing that we want to look at is a simple question. What means the loss of the coherence of the qubit if we just couple it to this big path? So we want to look at these off diagonal terms first. And at a very general level, we couple the spin along the z-axis to the bath. So it's a general case where we know for sure that the planar component of the spin pick up a random phase. And because it pick up a random phase, the expectation value of the SX operator become smaller and smaller. So at a general level, it's a proof that by coupling the small qubit to the bus, the spins enter into a mixed state. And we expect that the X component becomes smaller and smaller. So that's the main idea. Now, if you look at a more quantitative level, so what we get is as follows. So this is the curve that we obtain from an exact solution, and this comes from the exact numerical RG. So at small coupling alpha between the spin and the bath, the effect of the bath is quite simple. It's essentially to decrease the transverse flip. So then it becomes again a simple 2x2 matrix problem where you change the transverse flip delta by this new parameter delta R. That will play an important role for us. Yes?
So perhaps I missed this. What are you assuming about the state of the bath?
So here we assume, this is an important point here. So here we assume nothing. We just assume that the spin plus bath are in a ground state, the full Hamiltonian that we call HCR. And the ground state wave function is psi g. But for this particular problem, we can apply the Hellman Feynman theorem that relates the spin observable to the ground state energy. So simply, we don't need to know the ground state wave function here. We simply need to look at the ground state spectrum. And also, we should notice that for this particular problem, the SY component does not enter into the Hamiltonian, so of course the expectation value of SY is zero here. OK, Okay, so the first thing that we notice is indeed, as we expect, the bus creates some decrease of the SX component. Okay? But now we see that when alpha becomes larger than a certain value, which is like 0.5 here for this particular problem, we see that the field becomes too small that it can be treated perturbatively. So this is a very small number which goes to zero because we treat the limit of a very large bus. So now, if you ask me, when do I get the loss of the off-diagonal term of the spin reduced density matrix, then for this problem, I would say that it's around here, because I have my very nice formula that tells me that at this point, alpha equals 0.5, the off-diagonal term becomes very, very small. So that's what I would say. And then here, I can go very, very far, and I get the same formula that apply at very large alpha as well. Okay, so that's the first thing that we learn. But now what I would like to do is to link the loss of this off diagonal terms to entanglement. So at a general level, we could choose, you know, the up and down state of the spin basis, which is a good basis. So then we could build this very nice Schmidt wave function, where chi up and chi down are the bus states associated with the up and down state. So at a very general level, we could choose this entangled wave function. Okay? It's in a real life, it's not so simple to guess what are those ket here, but at least at small coupling between bus and spin, you can guess what are those values here. But now we would like to define a good measure of entanglement between spin and bus. So let me introduce the entanglement entropy. So again, we start from the spin reduced density matrix that we have defined here, and we build the final my entropy with this simple density matrix rho A. So, and this is called the entanglement entropy at a general level between the small system and the bus that we have integrated out here. Okay? So at a general level, this is a nice definition of entanglement for a bipartite system. And here it's a quite a simple case because we have a small and a big world. So it's simple to integrate out the big world. Now to solve this entanglement entropy, it's simple. We have to find the eigenvalues of this spin 2x2 matrix. So again, we have to compute the spin observables, Sx and Sz. But I told you that we can relate both of them to the ground state energy. So for this particular case, you can relate the entanglement entropy to the ground state energy. And before, so at a general level, we can understand what happens. So if we start with no coupling between bus and spin, so what happens? The qubit lies in a ground state, right? So P plus is the probability to be in the ground state. It's 1. And P minus is 0. So if you plug for alpha equals 0, no coupling between the qubit and bus, you can check that if you take this formula, you take P plus equal 1, P minus equals 0, what is the entanglement entropy? 0. Okay. Now, if we increase the coupling between bus and spin, what happens is that P plus will decrease because now the qubit can exchange some energy with the bus, and enters into the excited state. And then we get a mixed state. And at small alpha, it's quite simple to extract these two numbers here. And what one would find that the entanglement entropy grows like alpha, with a slope which is non-trivial, which is a log of the high frequency omega c divided by delta. Okay? Now, when we reach alpha equal half, I told you that Sx become very, very small. Now, let's think that the field along the z-axis is zero. By symmetry, expectation value of Sz has to be zero. So for this particular case, if you follow, we should reach that p plus and p minus are close to half. And therefore, the entanglement entropy should go to 1 in the log 2 basis, which is the maximum of entanglement. So for this particular case, it's very simple, at least when the field along the z-axis is almost zero, it's simple to make a link between decoherence and entanglement. Now to think about the phase diagram in a complete manner, I need to think about what will happen at very large alpha. It seems, not realistic to think in terms of at large alpha, but I will show you that in a real experiment, at the end, you can really, nowadays, control the parameter alpha. And the application for this I have in mind is called atomic setups. So let's look at large alpha. And this model of a qubit coupled to bus is a very nice model. Yes?
Just to build some intuition, I guess, for the quantum information here.
Yes.
It seemed like from your previous picture that around alpha is equal to 1/2.
Yes.
What this says is that the state, the quantum state of all the oscillators minus the qubit, they become orthogonal in the two different like bases, the up and the down bases for the qubit, right? That what you is what happens, I guess, if you go back a little more.
Here.
The next one, actually. So yes, the chi up and the chi down kind of become orthogonal.
Exactly. Yes. So you get a fully a general level, we can start with this entangled one. Here it can be plus or minus, but still it's an entangled wave function. And so if you want to look for instance at this object, it would be this object, this is delta, the transverse field, and you're right, this is chi up, chi down. And if you look how this thing goes, so at small alpha, it goes like a delta r, like this, and at larger alpha here, it goes to zero. And it goes to this small number. Okay? So it means that, on the other hand, it means that, so here you lose the off, a diagonal terms when alpha equals 0.5, because these become very small. And at the same time, you get a maximal entanglement between bus and qubit. And this you define through this entanglement entropy, which is defined like this. So if Sx become very small, and this term at h equals 0 is 0, then you get that p plus equal p minus equal half. It means that the qubit is really in a mixed state. The chance to be here or here is the same. And not just to go beyond that, this particular model is quite nice, because if you increase the coupling between a qubit and bus, you get a quantum phase transition. So to see the nature of this so-called quantum phase transition, you can, for instance, look at the qubit and integrate out the bus. And then you can map the problem onto well-known, because you have a zero dimensional quantum problem, because you couple a small spin to a bus, so it's a zero dimensional quantum problem that can be mapped onto a one-dimensional classical problem. And this one-dimensional, I mean a classical problem, are well known. Both are Ising spin chains with a long-range correlation in a space. And you can, also map this model onto a other well-known, model, which are called, for instance, the Kondo model. And what you find solving these very nice models is that if you just continue to increase the coupling alpha, so let's think now that the field along the z-axis is very small. I told you that what happens is that you will lose these terms at alpha equals 0.5, right? Now let's look at those terms here. As long as h is very small, you would tell me that z will be very small. So the spin has the same chance to be up or down, right? But now if you just continue to increase alpha, the bus creates a phase transition at zero temperature. It means that the qubit will become localized in one of the two states. And if I choose A to be just a smaller positive number, then the qubit is localized in the AZ equal minus one state. And so this is a beautiful case of a bus that can create a phase transition. So now we are able to look at the phase diagram for entanglement. So this is the phase diagram that we obtain. So let's start with H small. So I told you that if you start at small alpha, the entanglement E grows in a linear fashion. At alpha equal 0.5, you get a lot of decoherence or dephasing and entanglement. So now you get a very nice plateau at maximal entanglement at E equal 1. But because we get a very nice phase transition at alpha equal 1, where essentially the order parameter AZ jumps to minus 1, the entanglement follows this jump. Why? Because here we get the spin which is just in one state, so we just get a simple product of states. You can forget this part. So no entanglement here. So this is a nice curve. And again, at alpha equals 0.5, we get a link between the maximal entanglement and loss of the off-diagonal term of the density matrix. Now, if we increase the field along the z-axis, I told you that the effect of the bus is to affect the Pandora's field. So we should compare H and this normalized value. If H is much smaller than delta R, we expect that this field has no effect on entanglement. And that's what we can see. Let's fix H and look at the function of alpha. So if I look at small alpha, I see that all the curves fit into the same one. But now when I increase alpha, when I will reach this crossover between let's call it the entangled zone and the localization region, we should expect that again the entanglement goes down. But I should mention that at finite h, this line here is just a crossover. So then we get a smooth downturn of the entanglement entropy each time we cross this line. And so now we can ask, but what happens if we are here? So if we are here, we still have a good qubit. Namely, we can really nicely prove that the buried phase or the geometric phase of the qubit still makes sense here. And this you can prove in a nice way. So if you ask me what is the role of the environment, at some point it's bad because we have some entanglement, some decoherence. But somehow, if we manage to be here, it's not too bad because we can still act on the qubit and make some operation. And for those who like, for example, a new phenomena, the external world can create some new features. And for instance, here I showed one case of a phase transition. So it's a nice case. Okay, so what I have shown so far is that if we look at this nice model of one qubit, which is a couple to bus, so the loss of quantum, a coherence, appear at alpha equal half. We lose the off, so-called diagonal term of the spin, a density matrix, and at the same time we get a plateau of entanglement. But for those of you who like to look at problems in time, like the Rabi oscillation, it may be nice to ask what happens to the Rabi profile and how the bus affect the well-known formula that we know from Rabi. So that's what we will look at right now. So let's apply a field again in the x-axis, and we just prepare the spin in the z-axis. So we expect that the spin will do this nice precession. And the thing that we want to ask now is how this term between spin and bus will affect the coherent oscillation. So that's what we want to ask right now. And I would like to say that it's not a simple problem. If I ask you to solve this, qubit dynamics problem, it's not simple. We could start doing what Liggett et al. Have done quite long ago right now. So let's look at that. Let's think that we start at weak coupling again between the spin or qubit and the environment. Okay? So let's do that. Then it's quite simple. We can start to write down the Heisenberg equation of motion of Hz. And now we can assume that because we are at weak coupling, the wave function can be written as a separation of spin wave function times the bus wave function. So if you assume that, then all the information of of the bath is here. And this we could solve for any kind of bath, spin bath, subohmic bath, I mean all kind of bath. But for this type of ohmic bath, at zero temperature, or say at low temperature, lower than the field we apply, then this function F yield a power law decay. So we get what we call a non-Markovian evolution. Okay? So this is the equation you get. So this is not an exact equation. It's the equation that we obtain if we assume that we are at weak coupling between bath and spin. And this allows to separate the spin dynamics from bath dynamics. Okay? So now we can solve this equation through Laplace transform. And what we found, I mean, what Leggett and Chakraverty et al. Found some 30 years ago, at least within this approximation, is the following. So no coupling between qubit and bath, you get a very nice Rabi oscillation, and delta is the transverse field. Okay? Now, as soon as I couple the spin to bath, we get a damping of this oscillation at long time, which means that we get some exponential decay of this oscillation, as we expect. Okay? And also we get that the frequency of these oscillations are changed with the bath. And now if you increase your coupling between spin and bath, you find that at alpha equals 0.5, so where you get all these the dephasing and maximal entanglement, now you completely lose the oscillations. The behavior become incoherent. No oscillation at all, and the spin or the qubit goes relaxes to the ground state. So it seems that if I would have to define decoherent from Rabi oscillation, what I would say is that it would occur at alpha equals 0.5. Because here, at short time, I don't get some oscillation. I just get a pure decay. So this is what, and you can build a very nice ratio between this frequency of oscillations and the exponential decay. So at alpha equals zero, it diverges because we get no damping, and at alpha equals 0.5, it goes to zero because we don't get the oscillation. But then you could tell me, I mean, this is an approximation because here you somehow use a simplified wave function. So how do you know that this is still correct if we treat the problem seriously? So that's what I wanted to know, and we work on that since the last 2 years. So the first thing that we did, and I will show you one slide after, but I mean, here are a few details. So we managed to extend the path integral approach of Leggett et al., which is an extension of Feynman-Vernon integral, path integral, and we managed finally to solve the problem looking at a simple Schrödinger equation. This phi state is a spin-up state that we look at. And we want to know how this spin-up state look as a function of time. And what we managed to do is to introduce so-called Abram-Stratonovich variable to make the path integral simpler. And then at the end, the problem become quite simple and solvable. But I should mention that to solve this, so P of t here is a quality to find the spin in the up state. So it's the expectation of what we look for. It's the expectation value of z of t or sigma z of t. So here it's just a plot. So the blue dots are from our new approach. And here we plot the same quality factor that I showed you here from Leggett et al. So at small alpha, our blue point goes nicely with the Leggett et al. Results. But when we increase alpha, we see that it starts to, go away. So then you should ask me, what happened at alpha equals 0.5? But we know that alpha equals 0.5, you can solve the problem in a different manner. So I know how to solve the problem at alpha equals 0.5. So I know that this was the correct answer. And indeed, through another approach, so we at the same time we develop a time-dependent numerical RG approach, and indeed alpha equals 0.5, poof, pure exponential decay. So we check that it's correct. So and now you can ask me, what happens if you increase alpha for larger values? So now you see at alpha equal 1, you should guess that the spin will stay up, because I told you that you get a quantum phase transition where the spin remain localized in the up state. But it's a very nice crossover that happens at alpha larger than 0.5. And we look carefully at what happened for this zone here between alpha equal 0.5, where you get this decay, and at alpha equal 1, where essentially you get a flat curve. Yes?
You seem to have also values for alpha greater than 1. What does this mean? Like, does it jump like, say?
Good point. So here I cheated. This point is not 1 completely. And usually, a quantum critical point obeys the formula, which is alpha critical is 1 plus some nice correction in delta over omega c. So if you take this finite, you can get 1.1, 1.0, 0.5, etc. So for this particular plot, the phase transition occur around alpha equal 1.1, so this curve here. Okay? Okay, so I just wanted to tell that we made this nice approach, and I think that's a very nice way of looking at past integral problems. And so just to tell one point. So if I have to solve this kind of spin dynamics, so this is Sz of t that I have to find. So you integrate out the bath, okay? And then you get this f, this so-called, a function f, and it acts on two kind of space, so xi and chi, so maybe I should not here. So xi acts on the diagonal, on the off-diagonal part of the spin reduced density matrix, and chi acts on the diagonal part. So in the Leggett language, these are called the blips variable, And these are called the sejourn variables. And normally, if you look at this f function, it's not a nicer function because, so this part is nice, you get a xi and a chi. But here you get an interaction between blips at different times. And normally this is harder to solve this part. So Leggett et al. Made an approximation to solve this term. And what we essentially said is we use new set of variables to decouple this interaction. I mean, we can do that because if we have, for instance, some Gaussian integral, we could say that maybe I have to put some minus somewhere, but okay, so now b square over a, b is like, b square is like this thing. So then we can write this, x is like, here we need two new sets of variables, s1 and s2. Okay, it's two and not one, but let's think that it's like one. And then we can write this essentially in this form, no. Sorry, that's the contrary. My B here is this girl. Because normally we arrive at a function V. Okay, V is a complex matrix because it acts on this chi and xi, but the key point that I wanted to make, so here I made a mistake here. I mean, of course this is a correct, but that's not what we use because I could write after all some key points, but okay, this is correct, but it's not, I mean, the formula that we use.
Are you expanding xi in the eigenfunctions of the kernel L2? Is that what you're doing?
No, that's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is that this is a function here which is hard because I get a coupling between the xi at time which are not the same. So what we needed to do is to simplify. And here we get an exponential function of this. So at a general level, the question is how to simplify. And here I get an integral over the path. And so the question is how to rewrite this in terms of a new set of variables. And
so S1 and S2 are variables or operators to approximate these
solutions? S are simple random Gaussian variables because xi are just, you know, xi are simple, xi act on those parts, so they take values 0 and 1. And the same for chi here. Okay, so the key points that I wanted, and I will come back to this at the end because I need to just to clarify this part. But the key point is that we managed to rewrite this Sz of t as a simple problem of a simple Schrödinger equation. So, but this V matrix is complex because, of course, it depends on the coupling between mass and spin, and also you have to solve this in a numerical way because you have to make an average over this Gaussian variable. Oh yes, so that's precisely the point. That's precisely, thank you to this. That's what we use. And this is a Gaussian distributed variable. So this makes our Abarth. I was worried about this, but Gaussian distributed variable. And now, of course, we get this that we will include in this V. Okay, so I think that's a nice approach, and we will write this up soon. And I will finish to show that we can apply it to this nice problem of Lando-Zener, Majorana, and Stuckelberg. So what is that? It's a whole problem of quantum mechanics. I'm sure that you have solved this once. So we start with one qubit again. We apply a field along the x-axis, and we apply the field along the z-axis. And so we can build the ground state, the ground state as a function of the field here. So if I start with a field which is negative, I get the spin in the up state. So I start with the up state. If I start at large field, which is positive, I get the field, the spin in the down state, and in the middle, I get a superposition of up and down. And in the same way, I can build the excited state. Okay? And now we will ask the following question. What? Suppose that this field here now is called Vt, because t is like time. So suppose I act as a function of time, and I start with a qubit in the up state, okay? And I ask what is the probability to find the qubit in the up state as a function of time. So as long as time is shorter than the time to come here, you would tell me that p has to be 1 because the chance to be up is almost 1. But now, when the time is large, the spin has to be in the down state. So at very long time, the probability to find the qubit in the up state has to be small. And so you can solve this very nice quantum mechanical problem. So you have to find the solution for these two terms, C1 and C2. And one gets a well-known second order differential equation, which is a Weber equation. And solving this Weber equation, we get the answer that has a long time, the probability to find the qubit in the up state is not zero, as expected, because it's like WKB problem in quantum mechanics. We can think in terms of this zone here as a scattering problem, and we expect some exponential function. So when we don't have the bath, the gap between the ground state and excited state is like delta. So, and now we have to think about what is the time to go through, and it gives you this this function. And here V has a dimension of some speed, so we name it V here. And now what we want to ask is what happened if we include the bus. So how this value will change and how the full curve will change. So first, I would like to show you the full curve. So we look how the spin up goes if we increase time. So at short time, the probability to find the spin in the up state is 1. At some point, it jumped, and it jumped to this a number, which of course depends on V. So if I increase V, I make this value bigger and bigger. But now, so this is the result of our new approach. If we set alpha equals 0, so not a big deal, because you could tell me that you could solve this in a simple way. Yes, but this part is quite tricky to get from analytical point of view. So now the thing that we want to ask, what happened to this value or to this jump if we couple the qubit to the bus? So what happens? And this is a very nice problem. And at a general level, you can write a simple theorem that has been proved last year by Engi, Kayanima et al. And this says the following. If you couple the spin along the z-axis to the bus, as what we did for all this talk, we should find that the long time value of the probability to find the spin in the up state is the same as in the case of no coupling between qubit and bus. And this is a very nice theorem. Of course, it would not work if we couple the qubit along the x-axis to the bus, but it works if we couple the qubit along the z-axis. And so what we wanted to know is what happened close to the jump. So now let's think that we will couple this qubit to the bus. So let's think that we will start with a simple problem where we couple the qubit to one oscillator. Then what you find is that after the jump, you get some small jump. And it's a kind of weird behavior. And so what is that? It's simple. Because if you couple the qubit to a bus, to one oscillator, after the qubit, let's say, jump into this part, it can still exchange some energy or emit some photon and go back to this ground state. So that's why, at a general level, this jump is a complex function, and this decay is a complex function.
If you have one oscillator, what is its frequency relative to the delta? What is the frequency of that oscillator? You have one oscillator, right?
Yes. You can solve the problem for all kind of values. Here I don't I have in mind this values here for the bus, but for the oscillator, I think we took delta. I think quite close to h bar omega. So we add the dynamics of this oscillator as usual, and I think we took this to be close to a delta. But you could solve the problem for all delta, and it's a simple problem to solve. But now for the bus, we took this smaller compared to that, and what we found is quite nice. we found a universal decay after the jump. And now we are making a nice work to see more clearly why we should expect this new function. So the claim is as follows. If the field along the z-axis, okay, is much larger than this value, then we expect that all the spin part will win, and we can ignore the bath. So it means that at very long time, we expect that the qubit will go to its value that I mentioned. But in between, we have a complex jump. And this size is tricky. I mean, we don't know yet for sure what it is. But for sure, we understand what happens here. Because again, if the qubit or the spin cross this line, it jumps, but it can still go back here because it can exchange some coupling with the bus. And now, so that's a new thing that we look into details. It's the new behavior in the Landau Zener problem after the jump and before the long time limit, which means essentially this limit. So if you just couple the qubit to one oscillator, the physics is less nice because you get a series of jump. But it's not so pretty as this nice curve. So that's what we learn from this new curve, that we have a new limit for the Landau Zener problem. And this is a nice thing because you could apply those ideas to a spin bath, this is a general issue. What happened after the jump in the Landau Zener problem.
Now, would those fast oscillations frequency be determined by more or less the energy separation between the spin up and spin down?
True. So
that's why your frequency accuracy.
Yes. Okay. So maybe I should say that. So this is driven by the qubit that goes back and forth. I mean, it can go up and then come down, and then come up and then come back. So, the usual case, this gap is delta. If we couple the bath, the qubit to the bath, I told you that delta become change. So now the thing that we look at in more details is what is the height of this spectrum here. And we hope that it tells us something about the renormalized delta that I mentioned. But I must say that we obtain this from our new approach, from the random noise approach. But it's really a hard problem. I mean, you have to be really careful with analytics and numerics. It's not simple. Okay, so just to finish, I would like to ask what happens if I go, if I have more than one qubit now. And now I would like to finish on a quite nice note and say that noise can be a good thing. And I can show why, because at least if I put two qubits in a bath, let's say that bath can be the boson bath that we have looked at, the fermion bath, it could be some photon waveguide. At a general level, you can prove that to bus. If you couple each qubit to the same bus, it can induce some interaction between the qubits. And so, this is good for applications. And the nature of this coupling or entanglement between qubits varies dependently on the nature of the bus. Fermion, it's a well-known RKKY interaction, but still for both bus, if you couple the qubit along the z-axis, you can get some Ising interaction between the qubits. And the thing that I look right now is the following point. So is there a way to maintain the coherence of a chain of qubits coupled to the same bus? We know that the bus is good to induce a coupling between the qubits. So maybe there is a way to prepare the qubits in such a way that we can maintain the full occurrence of the qubit chain. And one case that we know from Duran and Guo is a case when we don't have a transverse field, so delta equals zero. You just couple the spin along the z-axis to the bus, and you can maintain the full occurrence of the qubit chain at long time. So this is one case that is quite nice. And just one slide on applications, because I just mentioned that this can be in principle applied in real life. So we need a qubit. So we can build a qubit as we know from nano systems. If we build a small island of particles, it's like an artificial atom. So we can choose a qubit which is, for instance, the charge onto the artificial atom, because charge has to be quantized, 0, 1, 2, or if we have a Cooper pair, 2, 4, etc. And at a simple level, if we want to build such a quantum dot in real life, we have some external worlds, some gates, and those gates have impedances. And we know from a simple course on electromagnetism that we can write some impedance or some resistance as a nice transmission line. And this line plays a role of the boson bus. And in fact, for this particular case, the spectral function is ohmic. And the alpha depends on the impedance of the circuit versus the so-called quantum of resistance. So in real application, this value of alpha is much smaller than alpha 1 or 1/2, but at least we can learn good things from this circuit, because we can measure SZ from charge onto the dot. And in principle, we can measure SS. So this is the quantum dot. And if we place this dot onto a ring, if we apply a flux, we expect to have a persistent current. And it's simple to show that for this problem of charge qubit, so here again, the noise come from this nice line. And for this particular problem, the current is linked with SX. So maybe it would be quite nice to have a measure of the persistent current for this kind of dot systems. And as I mentioned earlier, a nice case is to build an atomic qubit. So we can do that from cold atom. So you use light to trap the cold atom. And if we have a really tight trap, it's like an atomic quantum dot. So the charge here is 0 or 1. So it can play the role of a qubit. And for this nice proposal to have an atomic quantum dot, the role of the boron bath can be a Bose-Einstein condensate, because we know that at low energy we get sound modes, and these sound modes are like the transmission line here. So this is a new case where we can implement this spin boson model and tune the coupling alpha from 0 to big values. So we hope that experimentalists will make this setup soon and could implement those nice ideas that I mentioned today. So I will stop here, and thank you for your attention.
So when discussing the Landau-Zener problem, I think you mentioned some results that were also applicable to spin bears as opposed to bosonic bears. Can you say more about that?
Yes. So when I mentioned this, when I mentioned this statement here, that at long time, if you couple the qubit along the z-axis to any bath, you should converge to this value that I mentioned here. So, this is correct. So if I couple the qubit to a bath, along the z-axis, at long time, I should find that the curve converges to this value. But what I mentioned is that those details after the jump depend on the type of bath that one gets. And here I showed two cases of one oscillator, and you see that here you get this noisy behavior, and for a bath of boson you get this. But this is again for the ohmic case. So if I would look at the super ohmic case or sub ohmic case, I would get a different decay. So spin bath is maybe super ohmic, so I should get a different decay than exponential decay. So in this sense, one has to look in more detail now about how this decay happens. But I think that's a nice problem. How you go to the long time limit after the jump. And this is still a new problem, just a few years ago. So, but still it's quite hard to solve those question for a bath. For one object it's quite simple, but for a bath it's not simple.
I'd like to ask a question on the beginning. So in the first half, you were looking at the ground state of the spin plus bath system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look at the ground state property, look at the quantum phase diagram of that system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are systems with a continuum spectrum, isn't it?
Yes.
So why should the ground state be so... In a sense, if I look at any realistic situation, I wouldn't even be able to get anywhere close to the ground state. It's a continuum. I can never be cooled down to the ground state. Ah, okay. Why should the ground state be so important?
Okay, very good question. So I try to show this in this slide here. So here I put H, but we can add another axis, which is, for instance, thermal effects or temperature. And we would get the same crossover line. So if T is smaller than this value, we expect that the ground state properties are almost the same as those at T equals zero. So essentially, you have to manage to be in a limit where KVT is smaller than delta. If I take a Josephson, for example, a junction, this is the hopping between Highland and the so-called superconductor. So I think that this is quite simple. I mean, you need to go at a few Kelvin or below. So I am not sure that it's so hard to do. So the point is, if you manage to have, for example, a temperature smaller than this, at small alpha, this goes like this value, for example, a delta. So this you can do in a quite nice way. Now, if you ask me to approach this zone, maybe this is a more delicate point, but I think with cold atoms, I could argue that nowadays with cold atoms, they work at this range of frequency, which is a kilohertz. And if we put this in temperature, it means micro Kelvin. So this would be fine. Okay, so I will...